our own White House correspondent, John Decker. Some interesting court stuff going on all around more than one state, John, including Florida, Georgia, regarding Donald Trump.
Well, that's right. Let's talk first about the state of Georgia, that state election interference case against Donald Trump, as well as many other co-defendants. The judge deciding yesterday to drop three of the charges against Donald Trump. 10 charges still remain, Jack, including a very serious charge of racketeering against the former president. The three charges were dropped by the judge. He determined in this 9-page ruling that the district attorney, Fani Willis, in Fulton County did not provide the necessary specificity in terms of bringing those charges against Donald Trump. He left the door open. If Fani Willis meets the requirements, the threshold for specificity in another indictment on these charges, he may reinstate them. But as things stand right now, 10 charges remain against Donald Trump in Georgia. Still no start date for that trial in Georgia. What we know is that in 11 days, Donald Trump will be in a criminal courtroom. That will be in Manhattan, that other criminal matter that he's contending with during this election cycle.
And, you know, it just seems to me, John, that we're going to see more of this probably than not. And depending on that Florida case, some of these could be delayed till after the general election, which I'm sure the Trump team would like, but we'll see where it goes.
Well, that's right. And a lot of it also depends. The decision by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court in late April will decide whether or not that issue of absolute immunity applies to the former president as it relates to the acts that he took, alleged criminal acts that he took while he was president of the United States.
Congressman Chris Pappas, 1st Congressional District out of the state's largest city, Manchester, Democrat, incumbent member of Congress, joining us. Congressman, thanks for being with us. Good morning, New Hampshire, the pulse of an age.
Hi, Jack. Good morning. Always good to be on the show.
Well, thank you. I want to talk. I saw a news release from your office about you supporting a border security task force. Can you elaborate? I thought this was interesting and timely.
Sure. Well, it's actually a group of pragmatic Democrats that have started a border security task force. This is an issue that should transcend politics, and it's long past the time for posturing on this issue. We've got to fix it. And this has been an urgent need for a long time. And I think what our group is hoping to do is to continue to raise the urgency to pass legislation in Congress that will support efforts to secure our border and to reform our immigration system. And again, I think this is an issue that is at the top of mind that most people I talk to around New Hampshire, they want to see something done on this. We just can't have an unlimited flow of migrants into this country. It creates an unsafe situation at the border, but also for the individuals that are traveling long distances to get here. And we need a safe, orderly process for people to either seek asylum or to apply for status here in the United States. So this looks to make sure that we've got resources at the southern border to support our Customs and Border Patrol and look for long-term reforms that have been on the back burner for too long in Washington to our immigration system. I think there's some pragmatic things we can do here that will support efforts in a bipartisan fashion to actually fix this as opposed to just arguing about the problem.
Right. Unfortunately, big problem, but politics are always involved. Congressman, yesterday, the New Hampshire Attorney General issued a release urging the U.S. Senate to act on this Laken Riley bill, which basically would say any illegal migrant who's caught with certain crimes, arrested with certain crimes, would be detained. Did this pass the House? Do you have a feeling on this? Do you think this is a good thing?
Well, I supported that, and the loss of that young woman, the murder of that young woman, is a tragedy.
Yeah.
We absolutely should be ensuring that anyone who commits a crime is held accountable and is deported from this country as swiftly as possible. So that's what that legislation looks to do, and I do hope the Senate follows suit and passes it.
Congressman, the president talked about the border bill that stalled in Congress and the State of the Union. You started the interview this morning talking about, I can't exactly remember how you put it, but did you say pragmatic Democrats or a group of Democrats that want to see more action? I'll let you use your own words on the board.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, I think we got to be pragmatic about this, and I think there's a home in both parties for pragmatism and problem solving.
So I think this border security task force, I think this is what action. But my point is, regardless of what passes or not in terms of the border bill that stalled, do you have some degree of frustration with the Biden administration up until now for not doing more to secure the border? Because I know a lot of Democrats say that in national polling. Yeah. They're frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have voiced that through the years. If you remember a year or two ago when we were talking about the end of Title 42, and I was just one of a few Democrats in my party who was raising alarm bells about a lack of preparedness for the end of that policy and was urging the administration to come up with a plan. And obviously, that plan was not adequate to address the numbers that we have seen at the southern border. And so this is an area where I think the administration should look at what existing authorities they have and continue to utilize them and find new ways to provide the kind of security that Americans expect. But also, this is a matter of resources. I was reading a report recently, as we think about the drug problem along our southern border, where we've got technology that Customs and Border Patrol has to provide for better screening of passenger vehicles and commercial vehicles coming into this country. That's where 95% of the fentanyl comes in. Yeah. But they can't deploy it because they don't have the funding to put this at all the checkpoints. And that is unacceptable. So this is an issue where the administration should be using every tool possible, but there's more Congress needs to do to provide for new authorities and funding. And that's where our group is going to continue to push the House majority to bring legislation to the floor that can do that.
A thin majority, I bet. Well, Congressman, please keep us posted on the Border Security Task Force efforts. I really would love an update, and I appreciate it. Hey, I want to switch gears quickly before we let you go on veterans. I do want to say, but I had a question on one particular congressional issue, but I think recently, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you received a pretty, I know that awards and plaques may not matter, but I think in the veterans area, it does a pretty good recognition, and I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but congrats on that. It's well-deserved. You've been a steadfast supporter, but what was that recognition? It was about a week ago?
Yeah, well, the Disabled American Veterans that's recognized me as their Legislator of the Year. But really, it's just on behalf of New Hampshire veterans that I do this work.
And, it was the DAV.
We're just listening to them and trying to follow through. Yeah,
well, on the DAV. So that was it. I'm sorry. But I want to ask you, because Tom Raffio, someone you know of and well, I hope, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dentals, on my show a lot, good friend, good sponsor, but a good friend. He does his weekend show here. And he and I have been talking for years about this glitch that exists in Congress. Not necessarily a VA malfunction on oral health care coverage for veterans. If I understand it, the current law is like you have to show you were a POW, and which is, you know, very difficult and rare and not big numbers for veterans, or hurt, you know, directly, direct result in the line of service. And a lot of veterans may need surgery years after service, might be 15, 20, 30 years or 10 years, and they can't go back and say, this is, you know, a result of being on a carrier for 4 years in my, you know, the vibrations and, you know, whatever. So the point is this glitch, it seems like a simple glitch where there seems to, you think there's enough money in the VA system to cover oral health care because as people age, some of these procedures, as you know, are not like whitening, no offense to whitening. They could be a surgery in oral health. You could have an infection. You could have an issue. It could be a surgical. It could be thousands of dollars. So in New Hampshire with Tom and through our efforts, we've been able to get Dr. Mitch Corray and a group of veteran-owned dentists to kind of do these surgeries for free to the veteran quickly. All they have to do is call Tom and his office number, which is amazing. And then Delta Dental's board has stepped up with an amount each year to sort of augment or supplement the dentist, the veterans. My point is, this is working, but it's a private solution. Mm-hmm. Is this glitch fixable in Congress? Why doesn't it get fixed?
Well, it should absolutely get fixed because when you think about a veteran's whole health, oral health is part of that. And, you know, the veterans earned benefits, I believe, through their service, and we shouldn't be nickeling and diming them when they get back. So we're supporting legislation to create a pilot program for dental health within the VA system. Obviously, there's a price tag associated with it, and so it's been hard to get the numbers we need in Washington to support it. So I commend folks in New Hampshire that are stepping up to help fill in this gap. It's something we're committed to resolving, and I hear it from vets all the time. They like getting their care either through VA or through a community provider, but they know that dental benefit is missing, and I think it's something we absolutely should do for our veteran population.
Well, thanks for all you do in that regard. Thank you, Congressman Chris Pappas, First Congressional District on this Thursday morning. We'll get you back again soon.
Take care, Jack. Thanks.
Our state police segment each Thursday brought to you by Auto Fair. Jason LaCroix and the team at Auto Fair supporting public safety. And we have Trooper Joshua Howe. I had some buddies growing up with the last name of Howe where I grew up north of Boston, and he's from Troop C. And he's checking in on talking a little bit about his background and recruitment thoughts. And we are, I think there's a test coming up for the state police, but also the effort or the looking at, you know, I talked the other day on firefighters. We had head of the Firefighters Association, Mr. Green, on talking about recruitment for firefighters, these wonderful, important careers to keep us all safe. And I want to bring in Trooper Joshua Howe. Thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Troop C, where, and just tell us where and what the mission is, where that is.
Sure. Troop C is the southwestern corner of the state. Keene is where our barracks is at. So we have Cheshire and Sullivan County is that encompasses Troop C. So down in nowhere's land, sometimes people call it. nowhere. Yeah. So a lot of rural. We don't have a whole lot of interstate in Troop C, so we're kind of a little bit different than what most people think about when they think about state police. They think interstates and Manchester and Concord and these areas. We're a very rural troop, not like Troop F so much, but very similar. Not a lot of interstate.
Trooper, how many years on, and what drew you, what brought you to it?
Sure. Yeah, I got into a little bit later in life. I have 6 years on right now. I came in April. Actually, this is my anniversary month, April of 2018. And so just about 6 years, I started the process when I was 35 cold, no prior service in law enforcement. I was a contractor building houses in the same area. I'm a New Hampshire kid, born and raised, and I grew up, went to the military, and I just had this sense of service, I think, and I spent a lot of years after the military kind of building houses and supporting my community that way, and I get to 35, and I really wanted to do something different, so I looked towards law enforcement.
You know what? What a great story, because, you know, I talk a lot about that with your colleagues, especially in the recruitment side. And you think of life today and careers and what people go through. And I'm just saying, you may not feel some days that 35 is that young, but let me tell you, it's young. And and what I'm saying is, you know, it's a great time to look at a change. You were building homes. That's a great profession, builder, contractor, and yet you made a change. And so I think you're going to see more people like that, maybe in the early 40s, late 30s, do the same thing. So what do you say to someone like yourself who's kind of thinking about service, trying to help? They kind of like what they do, but there's something missing. Would you recommend someone else to look into this as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. At the time, I didn't know it, but now I see it. That the wisdom I gained over my first 35 years of life, just life experience, whether it was working with customers or being in the military, whatever have you, it really helped me in this job. I think I was kind of ahead of the game when it came to interactions with people, especially in a rural troop when you're dealing with domestic violence and everything under the sun you can kind of come across. It's nice to have that experience in my pocket to be able to talk to people, de-escalate situations. It really came in handy. So my advice to anybody who feels like a longing to do more, to give more to the community, or just to have more fulfillment in their life, is absolutely a great way to pursue that. And I think the wisdom and age that comes with time is definitely a benefit for this job.
I'm not saying everything's perfect. Life isn't. But do you like the job? Do you like the mission each day? What do you like about it, Trooper Howe?
Sure, and I will speak specifically to state police. Law enforcement can definitely be a lot to carry, you know. It's a lot of responsibility, and we do have a big job ahead of us. But that being said, the opportunity and the gratitude that I experience on a daily basis when I turn off the news and just see what the news advertised, but the actual feeling of the people on the street, it's so rewarding. So although there is a burden to bear to have all this responsibility, the rewards far outweigh that burden, absolutely.
Now, just before, I had a question just on some car or drive, you know, the car unit team, and I want you to tell us what that is. You mentioned your mission out of Troop C because of the geography and location might be a little bit different than, say, a trooper in Troop A in Epping, or B, I think, is in Bedford. So, or, you know, the Seacoast, busy 95 on the Seacoast,
sure.
93, or 101. How does your mission, what's different about it in the sense that you cover more smaller towns? Does it run into a different set of challenges versus vehicle stops sometimes because you're dealing with residents or issues? Do you cover a broader territory? Explain the differences.
Sure. I would say the big difference is like troopers on interstates and high thoroughfares for like 101 and 95, 93 and things like that. Interdiction, high speeds or stuff that, you know, they're gonna get into that a lot. Things that we do, which really fills me up inside, is things like going to the local small elementary school and just being, having a presence patrol is kind of what we call it. We're just in the area. They can see that we're there. We're introducing ourselves to the young kids and stuff like that. So I think we get to do, in our rural troops, we get exposure to that a little bit more than probably some of the like Troop A, Troop B, and some of Troop D. So that's really rewarding. And yeah, when it comes to like small towns, a lot of DWIs in the small town back roads. I mean, you get that on the interstate too, but it's slightly different in where we're kind of finding these things. It's kind of niche-y. And domestic violence is really big around here. Drug intervention in terms of overdoses and ambulance calls, we get a lot of that as opposed to just getting people running drugs and up and down the interstate. So it's different but the same.
Interesting. Now tell us about the car unit. And we are coming up to, I think a lot of times spring, more people out and about, but car safety, and a lot of times people, we all get, everyone gets driving a little fast, everyone gets a little distracted. Just talk about the car unit and some safety thoughts.
Sure, yeah. So our car unit is the Collision Analysis and Reconstruction Team. I'm a part-time member of that, so I'm pretty much a patrol trooper, but I help out with that team. I'm a member of it. And basically what we do is if there is a fatal car crash or a serious bodily injury or some other motor vehicle collision that's it's in the news, it's a big case, the car unit is going to usually get the call to that. And not just state police. We also help other agencies within the state, too. So if there's a smaller agency who comes across a really serious investigation that involves a motor vehicle collision, then we're definitely able to take the call and assist with that. We have a lot of great capabilities, a lot of technology that helps us map the scenes and put the pieces together. And that kind of goes into another great thing I love about the state police is there's a lot of avenues. We have canines, we have special units, we have major crime units and car units. So lots of areas to kind of reach out and try different things within the state police. But yeah, like you mentioned, like segueing from the car unit into general traffic. I mean, yeah, spring comes and the snow's off the roads a bit more on the interstates and some of the higher speed areas of the state. We're seeing a lot of people. We're getting a lot of people driving over 100 miles per hour on the interstates, and not just this time of year, but even like historically, it seems like we're getting a lot of those, a lot more than we used to in the past. Not just seasonally, but just as a trend. So we're seeing a lot more of that, and crashes, definitely a lot of severe crashes this time of year, especially with St. Paddy's Day holiday coming up. A lot of situations people can find themselves in. If they don't plan ahead, they can definitely get themselves in a sticky situation.
And I think we're going to have an early spring, so the bikes will be out soon. All right, thank you very much, Absolutely. Trooper Joshua Howe. Troop C, thanks for sharing some insight on the state police on the recruitment side or career side, profession side. Brought to you by Auto Fair. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Y'all be safe.
Fish with a Mission coming later this July. And this is a great opportunity for the public to interact, not just with Navy SEALs who are up here to support them and their families and other veterans, but tuna boat fishermen and captains. And what a wonderful time of year, late July. Phil, we want to put the word out early because you have a separate website up. We're delighted to be a sponsor of this and helping you about boat captains and the public to put an early marker in the calendar. Let's start off, Phil, and you have a great, I think one of your board members or head of your board joining you. Tell us what this is all about. I know Mark is with you. Phil, I'm going to let you quarterback this.
Jack, it's great to be on your show as always. And, of course, I love talking about veterans and Swim with a Mission. Let me just say at the outset how grateful I am that you and, the Benny Media and your show are going to step up here and be our media sponsor and help us with this, Jack. We really appreciate everything you do for veterans. And I am very excited. I have Mark Aquilino, one of our board members, the CEO and owner of Outdoor Pride, one of the top, Jack, as you know, commercial landscapers out there in Massachusetts, New Hampshire. And, you know, Jack, in life there are people that talk about doing stuff and there are people that actually do stuff.
Yeah.
And Mark has taken on this challenge. So, Mark, I'm not going to steal your thunder. Say hi to Jack and tell us about Fish with a Mission.
Jack, thanks for having us on. And, Phil, thanks for the nice intro. And, Jack, I just want to reiterate what Phil said. Appreciate all that you do for veterans and just above and beyond for the state. So we're happy to have you guys involved. But basically, we got thrown a nice opportunity from some of our friends out in the Seacoast to take over and be the beneficiary of a tuna fishing tournament, which we're excited about. So it's going to be out in Seabrook. It's going to be July 27th through August 1st. And we're excited to get the seals out there. We're a little nervous to get the seals out there, too. But we've got people coming from Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine. And we're going to have a great time. Going to have a great captain's dinner to kick everything off. And we'll get a couple days of fishing in and then give out a nice big check for whoever wins this thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great concept. And, of course, the pier in Seabrook and Hampton's going to be busy. We want to bring it right up into port. I want the whole Seacoast to our, of course, our Seacoast flagship WTSN up into Portland, Maine. Good Morning, Maine, York County. I want people from all over to know about this, 1270 AM, 981 FM, but beyond. But Mark and Phil, there's a lot of things that I love about this. One, it's doing good to support those who really go above and beyond. But the chance for the public who a lot of people have never seen like a tuna boat come in with a tuna, whether it's weighed out there or weighed at the dock or, you know, what size and all that. Of course, Wicked Tuna, getting on the national side of things right out of, Ryan Portsmouth, the family, the brother, you know, the team. But the point is, a lot of times people haven't seen a tuna, and they're an amazing animal, amazing fish. But the work that goes into it, it's really a science to mark these tuna, to find them, to go to the areas where they are. So these tuna captains are amazing. But then to have Navy SEALs on board with public members and then come in and be able to, mingle and talk. I mean, it's really cool stuff, and I think what you're looking for, Mark, tell us what you're looking for, how we can put out the early word. I know Phil's been in touch with some of the tuna captains in Maine and New Hampshire and Mass, but how can people out there, it may not be them, but they may say, you know what, my brother-in-law fishes tuna, he has a boat. What are you looking for, Mark, early here?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Jack. So we're looking for any and all boats, right? Doesn't matter the size, whether you're a weekend warrior or a commercial fisherman. We're looking for everybody that wants to participate in the sport of this event, which is massive. Before this, I didn't understand truly the magnitude of just how big fishing is. And what better place to do it than, up here in New Hampshire, where we have some of the best fishing, in the United States. So we're looking for boats of all sizes to come in and to fish. We're also looking for sponsors. We have some great sponsors that we're working with to come on board and help make this thing an amazing event. And what's really cool is where we're doing this out of the Yankee Fisherman Co-op in Seabrook, super, super publicly accessible. And we're going to be able to hang, the fishes that are caught there. We're going to be doing some cool things with the fish that we catch in terms of donation. And then additionally, the public can come down and they can buy product from the co-op, which is going to be awesome. So we're looking for boats. We're looking for sponsors. And then we're just looking for anybody that's curious or wants to take a really cool picture with a big fish with all the stuff that we're going to be bringing in to just come up and join us between July 27th and August 1st up at the Yankee Fishermen's Co-op in Seabrook, New Hampshire.
So we have some time. So we're talking the end of July. Wonderful time of year, right in the heart of it. And, Mark, I just want to ask you a question because great business and all that. I can see the passion Phil has shared, trying to get him and Julie to write a book over the years, what drew him. And they have a wonderful story to even start Swim with a Mission. But what drew you to want to serve with Phil and his team and really head up this Fish with a Mission? But what drew you to want to support sort of the mission with Swim with a Mission?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I remember where I was when 9/11 happened, and I'm a little bit younger. I was in the seventh grade, and I'll never forget my father picked my brother and I up from school, and we drove by the Reserve Center in Manchester. Mm-hmm. And, as a young kid, I didn't really necessarily understand what happened. And my whole life leading up to that, I was always taught when you meet a veteran, you say thank you, and you look them in their eyes. And then that message just kind of always lasted with me. So when 9/11 happened, I just remember it so vividly. I remember driving past the Reserve Center and my father, shedding tears as to what was going to happen. And at that point, we've had the war in 9/11, the war on terror since then. And I've just had the biggest, amount of gratitude, admiration, and respect for our servicemen and women. And so then Phil and I have a unique story of how we met, but he's been a great mentor to me. And when he shared with me all that him and Julie are doing, I couldn't stop myself from being compelled to just wanting to help and do whatever I can for our veterans, because to me, the ultimate level of service is what they're signing up to do for our country, which just means the world to me.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well put, Mark. And Phil, before we let you both go, we'll get you back again because we want to message this each week to build up momentum. Boats, people who have boats who are out there, Seacoast in New Hampshire, Southern Maine, that's our prime audience. Public, to mark this date down, to basically, you know, want to take part in some of these events. And we're hoping to put something together at the Portsmouth Elks earlier in the week. But you have a special website, right, Phil?
We sure do, Jack. We ask folks to go to our website, swam.org, S-W-A-M, swam.org/fishwithamission. Or just to make it easy, just go to swam.org. You'll see the events, scroll through them, Fish with a Mission. And, Jack, at the end of the day, as you know, our veteran service organizations are not getting enough money and resources to provide all the services our veterans need. So we need more events, and we're just hoping something really super fun like this will rally the community, get people excited, and raise more money. So, Jack, thanks for all your support.
What's better than fishing and hanging out with some Navy SEALs and giving thanks and supporting them? Big money. I like what Mark said earlier, too. July 27th through August 2nd, July 27th through August 2nd, mark it down. It's the official 2024 Tuna Pro Open. Tuna Pro Open. Charlie Moore won't even get near this thing because he just catches those little 2 or 3 pound smallmouth bass. We're talking tuna. All right. Check them out. Boats, public. I'm going to get Jumpin' Joe Moore on this and a lot of other people. So, Moore, thank you both very much, Phil. And drive safe, and we'll keep pushing this because we have time. It's going to be a big one. We're going to have fun, and it's going to do a lot of good. So thank you.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Jack.
Aaron Neral, NBC News Radio national correspondent, one of the great ones, talking about the old saying, keeping up with the Joneses. I wonder who the Joneses really were. But anyway, social media leaving younger folks, feeling not really like they can keep up with the Joneses. Take it away, Aaron.
Yes, close to impossible when you sprinkle in social media, and they now have a term for it, Jack. It's called money dysmorphia, and it's a term that describes the distorted view of one's finances. Apparently, almost 30% of Americans say they experience this. This is according to Credit Karma. It's worse for the youngs. 43% of Gen Z, 41% of millennials say that they struggle with comparison to others and feel behind financially. It is part of our lizard brain to look at what the person next to you has and compare. That's something that's very difficult, if not impossible, to turn off. Mm-hmm. And then when you sprinkle in social media, oh boy, you're not just looking over the fence to the Jones family. You're looking at the entire world. And here's the thing. People are now finding that they're overspending on these big ticket items, the vacations, the home renovations, the luxury goods, because they see other people doing it. But make no mistake, many of those folks are profoundly in debt and are not happy. You can stand there with the new shiny car and smile, but it doesn't mean you're sleeping well at night.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say this. The other day, of course, I'm like that insurance ad. I've seen a thing or two, and I've lived I have a little more time in than you and J-Dog on some stuff. But I was walking the other afternoon with my dog, and I take my afternoon workouts, and I'm out there, and might have been Sunday because the bank wasn't open, but in a bank parking lot of all places, I see this one guy meeting another guy with two pickup trucks because the one guy was selling his old, it might have been like a Toyota pickup truck, and the other guy had a pickup truck. And the two of them were just talking and looking at the truck. I don't know how much he was asking for it. And the other guy said, yeah, this thing's about to croak. I have like 230,000 miles on it, so I'm going to have to get a new pickup truck. And you know, you look at that frugality, and sometimes you're right. Sometimes the bigger house next door is not all it's cranked up to be.
No, usually never. Everyone has their own problems, and whether they be money or not, it is a rising issue with the rise of social media. And listen, I get it. These things are addictive. And as a grown woman who participates in Instagram, you see other, and I'm like, man, how do these mothers get their kids so clean and shiny? And you get it. You can see it. And I can only imagine how painful it is for younger people who, you know, time gives you wisdom, and without a lot of time, you're just kind of beholden to the chaos around you, and it's easier to fall susceptible to it. Yes, I'm sure it is painful. And then when you see everyone with fancy things and you're like, what am I doing wrong? It's not necessarily the case. It's often just a manufactured performative version of someone as opposed to the real thing that's behind the social media screen.
Well, when you mentioned the young mom thing and looking and how busy it is, because I have kids and they have kids, I mean, kid one, but I know it always was, and somehow it's a blur to me how I got through those years with my smarter, prettier, better half of raising kids. But, and I wouldn't want to go backwards, which is sad, but, you know, when you were saying that, Aaron, real quickly, in a profound sense, I was thinking of Robin Williams, the late comedian, and Johnny Carson, the late Tonight Show host. J-Dog, I think we have another listener, I'm not sure who. And, you know, you the person who seems all put together, always in a good mood, life of the party, sort of the comedian, is not exactly who you think they are. And I remember Johnny Carson talking about his anxiety. You know, he did that show every night, and he was in people's living room with that man. But he couldn't go into a room of 10 people without having, like, a anxiety attack. And then you look at Robin Williams, always funny and all that, taking his own life. And so these people that sometimes look perfect, I always, I'm on the water a lot in the summer, and I always laugh. We go by a marina, Aaron, and you have them in Connecticut, and they're in Newport, Rhode Island, or, you know, you go by someone who have these mega yachts, you know, these people that are getting bigger boats. And I laugh and I go, you can have them, more gas, more fuel, and you have to hire a crew. Your dock slip is more. And if you want to put all your money into that, go ahead. But I can operate my boat by myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's just, yep. The bigger boat is always not the bigger whatever. And it's just people are, it's that Jones, keeping up with the Joneses. And I think it's kind of nauseating, but that's just me.
You're not alone. And you're right. You know, more money, more problems, as the great Biggie Smalls once said.
And why do you think tiny homes are catching on? These people that are getting these little homes, 400 square feet, tucked away because they're like, it's all I need. All right, Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio National. Good stuff. Always provocative.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Good morning, New Hampshire. Powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, we are back, and I want to bring in Lucas Meyer and give him plenty of time this week because we have a lot going on. Really, not so much noise, Lucas. It's hard to kind of pay attention to the stuff locally on a Thursday morning. Take it away, Lucas. How are you?
Oh, living that New Hampshire dream. It feels like spring has sprung, but I'm sure we'll get another snowstorm between now and, like, April or something. But it feels pretty good today.
All right, what's going on?
What's going on? Well, we had town elections on Tuesday across the state, and these are usually, you know, obviously very local races, so each community can have some hot-button issues, but the nonprofit I helped co-found, 603 Forward, we had about 90 young leaders file to run for office and on these elections on Tuesday, and over 70 of them won, and those are Republicans, Democrats, Independents. You know, we're just looking for quality young people who want to, you know, invest in their community and help make it a better place. And I tend to think, you know, these are elections where you can really try to have a civil conversation that can get stressful at times, like, which is reasonable. No major kerfuffles, no election interference, haven't crunched any of the turnout numbers yet. But, you know, folks were, you know, hopefully saw some good results in their community. And then in the state house, you know, I'm keeping my eye on the house floor today where they're voting on a voting rights bill, or I should say a bill that rolls back voting rights, HB 1569, which gets rid of all of our affidavits at the polling location. So let's say, you know, you're a new veteran that's just moved into New Hampshire and you go to vote and maybe you don't have your passport on you. Right now, you can sign an affidavit, which is a legally binding document that says, hey, I'm a citizen, you know, I want to vote, and then you can cast your ballot legally, and then the Attorney General can go back through those affidavits and see who was telling the truth, and the Attorney General hasn't prosecuted any cases from any recent elections with any affidavit fraud. But it's a good tool for eligible voters to cast their ballot, and mm-hmm. You know, now there's an effort to pull that away, and that could mean even if you maybe just have skipped one or two elections, two or three elections, when you went to go vote, you know, you might need to have all those documents again and not be able to sign that affidavit. So this is a particularly concerning bill. It'll be very close in the House. You had Governor Sununu yesterday say that, you know, he thinks our election systems work fine and he's not supporting any changes to them. We've heard the governor say this on a number of healthy democracy-related issues that have not panned out, and he has not kept true to his word. So I think the voting rights community is very plugged in on that vote this morning, and hopeful to see some bipartisan compromise to get that stopped and keep our elections accessible.
Do you still have a window? Do you have time to get your name on the ballot to run for governor as a Democrat? Are you waiting? Are you waiting?
No, I'm good. We have some great candidates, hey, be it Joyce Craig, Cindy Warmington, or John Kuiper. It's a good field.
Listen, it's interesting. We had Chris Pappas, someone you know well, Congressman, Representative 1st District, on the show out of the gate this morning live, talking about his effort, as he put it, to work with Lucas, I'm sorry, I have to go there. It's my show. It's what I do. I kind of point out some of the stuff that you got to read between the lines. He's working with pragmatic fellow Democrats to come up with a Southern Border Security Task Force. And he's all for doing more to secure our border, including the intervention devices that we have technology at the border. Most of the fentanyl, and he's correct, is coming across in vehicles. We can do more. But this, and when he didn't go down the typical State of the Union Democrat, Joe Biden, and if the Republicans passed the border bill that Trump kind of stalled indirectly or directly, he didn't even mention the border bill. And he's taking action. When I asked him if he felt disappointed in President Biden and the administration for not doing enough, he essentially said, yes, I've been very open about that. So I applaud him for this, by the way. My point is, I think that's interesting, and I think it shows this issue and some vulnerability for the president as he, presumptive nominee, and here we go again, Biden, Trump. And I just think that that border is going to continue to be an issue, along with abortion rights, along with the economy. But I'm going to let you just comment on Congressman Pappas. He seems to be, he has at times in the past a little more independent than, no disrespect, Representative Ann Custer in the 2nd District. And he voted for, by the way, the Lake and Riley bill that the Attorney General yesterday in New Hampshire is urging the Senate to vote for. So if someone here illegally breaks the law, they're detained. So what's your thoughts on Representative Pappas' positioning?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really tracks with who the congressman is and the kind of leadership he brings to Congress. I think he's not looking backwards towards the failed bipartisan. He's looking forward. So, okay, what can we do next? Because this is a problem. This is a problem that our country is facing, and a very serious problem. And I think, Congressman Pappas is always very driven by a solutions-oriented agenda. So if, it doesn't serve him to look back and criticize the past, instead to look forward. I think he was recently named, if not the most bipartisan member of Congress, but one of the most bipartisan members. And Jack, this gets back to my broken record that, you need fair maps to get good representation. And Congressman Pappas has been running in Republican-leaning districts since 2012 when he ran for the Executive Council. So he has always been driven by how do I build the broadest coalition and how do I talk to the most people in the state? And this is what people want. People want to see action on the border. So that's what he's going to try and deliver.
Well, buddy, you didn't even know the source. And you didn't know it was actually Mr. Gary from Marblehead. You didn't even know the source of gerrymandering. You got to get the book, The Indispensables. The Indispensables, wonderful Revolutionary War book about the Marblehead group that helped, Washington cross the river, if you will, and be the first Navy. But they reference the original source of where that term, not even pronounced correctly today, gerrymandering, actually came from.
Wasn't his name like Gary? Gerrymandering?
No, you're just saying that. I think he became governor, didn't he, of Massachusetts out of Marblehead.
He might have been.
And he sort of did this to, let's just say, improve his own election chances. All right, anything else going on? Where do we go on legalized marijuana? Is that like an April thing in the Senate or what?
Yeah, I think a slow burn, as they say.
Come on, Lucas.
Come on, I couldn't resist.
At least I caught it. Most news talk show hosts, they would have gone right over their head.
But, I'm not super optimistic that a compromise will come out of this. But I think in the next 2 years it'll happen. But a lot of details on how this model will be hashed out. Again, a lot of states have done this and learned a lot of lessons. I feel like New Hampshire is in a great spot to be able to implement a very equitable and lucrative business in the state for legal cannabis and sort of get over this, you know, very antithetical live free or die hurdle we have in the state.
You know what? Someone just sent me this, J-Dog. I don't know if you got it. LucasSMeyerForGovernor.com. Is that a website? Is that real? All right. If people want to really find you, what's the best way, Lucas?
Lucas S. Meyer on Twitter or CatalystAdvocacy.com.
All right. Thank you very much, Lucas. Hang in there. Appreciate it. Lucas Thank Meyer you, on the Democrat side. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Rory, I was thinking about this the other day. And yep. I'm sorry, I'm in a little bit of a whimsical mood. I get to go to Florida in a few days. So I'm in a better mood than I was in the last month. So here's the
there
deal. Here's the deal. You're in Florida all the time. You never leave. You're like DeSantis now. You're there all the time.
Oh, that makes me unlike DeSantis if I'm here in Florida.
So, Rory, this is the deal. This is the deal. You can't write this stuff. Putin is having elections in Russia over 3 days to give people a real choice. All his opponents are either poisoned, dead, or in prison.
Yeah.
The other one I have to chuckle on. Well, Joe will be going there with you. The other one I have to chuckle with is TikTok.
Yes.
China says it violates their free and open whatever. What's free and open in China?
Right. And they don't own everything anyway. Yeah, that's the matter. Funny part.
And then former Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin, to his credit, is trying to put together a group, an American group, to kind of buy the assets to make it American. You can't write this stuff, right?
A company, by the way, that has lost money. TikTok has never made money, but Mnuchin may get together a $50 billion offer for TikTok. But
what's that?
Yeah. What,
how much?
$50 billion.
And that's for real? $50 billion? Wow.
That was the valuation that they were discussing on CNBC this morning. Mnuchin didn't want to tip his hat. He says, I'm not going to be on TV telling you what I'm going to pay for it. But one of the hosts said that, well, it's been valued at $50 billion. Do you think that you can get some of your investors to go along with that? And he said some of the current investors of the company, which I think is about 60% foreign ownership anyway,
he
would get many of them to come along.
Well, it's interesting. It's part of the we'll see where it goes. You know, 50 billion social media platform. What an era! All right, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks.
Joe Matarese. You know what? I'm going to have him do something different because he's in our studios. Nice enough to come up, and we're going to be talking a lot of stuff. But Joe, I always introduce you. You're chairman of Medicus, but why don't you take a moment? Just tell folks professionally a little bit about Medicus, your background, because we're going to jump into the economy. What inflation really is and isn't, maybe even some politics and healthcare. But just tell us a little bit about you and Medicus and what you do to stay busy, as they say.
Sure, thank you. Well, good morning, Jack. I'm happy to be here, like always. So Medicus was founded in 2004, and it was based on a simple premise. What was happening in healthcare was the demographics were such where the population was aging pretty significantly. We were in the early stages of the baby boom retiring. So that put tremendous demand on an already taxed system. But the other side of that was the supply side. And there was essentially, and there still is, a doctor shortage. There's a lot of reasons for that. I think the main driver is that we don't produce enough doctors. And part of the reason we don't produce enough doctors, we don't have enough seats in the medical schools. And it's really driven by government and licensing, et cetera. So in a pure free market, we would be increasing the supply of doctors, but it's really capped. And it's even worse than that to some extent, because when doctors become doctors, they're doing it, you know, it takes 6, 7, 8, 10 years. So by the time they get into the workforce, that particular specialty may not be in as demand as what it was when they decided to get into that specialty. So there's huge imbalances. And so that was recognized, and part of my thesis in 2000 and at the University of Texas MBA was doing a business plan, and I did it on this particular industry. And to take advantage of that, 4 years later, really, was Medicus. And Medicus started in my basement in Windham, New Hampshire, with two of my good friends and business colleagues, Rick O'Callaghan and Grant Smith. And the three of us started this company, and here we are now 20 years later, and the company is one of the largest providers of healthcare services, physician services, really, in the country. I think we're...
In Windham headquartered, Windham, New Hampshire.
Yeah, we were there for about 6 months, And then we moved to a place in Salem, which was almost like an attic. It was the third floor of a building. It was the Black Dog building, which was kitchen renovations and whatnot. And we took the third floor. It was about 1,500 square feet. And then from there, we moved to Salem. And that's when the company really started to take off. We bought a condo. It was probably 10,000 square feet. And then that really led us in 2011 to build a real commercial Class A space in Wyndham. We have now over 60, 65, 70,000 square feet of Class A space in three buildings across a multiple acre campus. And the company has done incredibly well. We've taken advantage of those conditions. I think that things have, in the marketplace, probably have gotten worse, not better. And that actually drives the company's success to some extent. The more doctor shortage, the better Medicus does.
And Joe Matarese, I've heard, like, for example, I don't know if this is the same thing you're talking about, in emergency rooms and hospitals, sometimes they have a shortage of emergency room physicians, doctors, certain unique practices, orthopedic surgeon, a certain part of the country, anesthesiologist, they might have an inherent shortage. And that affects patient care and everything, right? There's just a shortage. It's just a shortage of those doctors.
There's no question about it. And it's by specialty. It's by geography. Really, what we're doing is we're taking doctors, and to some extent, it's almost like an arbitrage on one hand, because what we're doing is taking a surplus of doctors that may exist, let's say, in a specialty, let's say anesthesia in New Hampshire, and there may be excess capacity, and some of those doctors have the ability or time to go and then travel and go someplace else, and that someplace else usually is an area that it is severely short.
And that was sort of the problem you were solving. What I've heard from people like you on the business side, far smarter than me on this, there's a problem, and you have a solution, and you can make a business out of it. You might be able to make a business out of it.
Well, really, that's what entrepreneurship is at its core, is the identification of some need not being met in the marketplace, and an entrepreneur putting resources together to take advantage and solve that particular problem.
Good stuff. And how many folks now down in Wyndham still, or the total company? And if people want to learn more, the website and all that?
Yeah, it's Medicus, www.medicushcs, so medicushealthcaresolutions.com.
And you're chairman?
Yeah, I'm chairman. So the company has grown pretty significantly. We have probably close to 500 employees.
Wow.
In Wyndham, and I was the CEO from 2004 to 2020, right after the pandemic. We promoted the new CEO, Bob Dickey, and he's done a phenomenal job expanding the company's capabilities. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great 20 years. We're really grateful for being able to be in that situation. Grant is still with the company, and Rick O'Callaghan has moved on from the company, and he's now working at Fusion Cell,
company that you've created or helped create to help veterans get hired in the civilian sector, which is also out of Wyndham headquarters. So it's great entrepreneurial stuff you're doing there.
Well, New Hampshire is a good business environment, particularly relative to Massachusetts. But what I will say,
I don't know if that's saying much. No, I'm kidding.
I think you're onto something there, because I will say over the last 20 years, New Hampshire has gotten, I would say, generally worse from a business perspective.
Yeah.
It's not as free, probably.
As business friendly as maybe it could be.
Could exactly.
Now, before we go to the bottom of the hour, I want to switch gears, Joe Matarese. And if people want to learn more, you gave the website. But Medicus, you can Google that and find the company in Wyndham, New Hampshire. Joe, we're talking about the economy, inflation. High prices are kind of what people view inflation to be. But that you were saying earlier, that's just a symptom. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, basically, what purely inflation is the amount of money in circulation, the stock of money. And I think what's happening is people conflate these concepts. They go to the store and they pay, as you mentioned earlier, buying a loaf of bread or something, and it's much more money. And they go, that's inflation. And it is, it's price inflation. But core inflation is the stock of money. As the government prints money, they add money to the economy. And when you think of the equilibrium between goods and services and the quantity of money, it reaches what you call equilibrium. So prices tend to be pretty stable, and they are what they are. When you add money, significant money, and of course, under the Trump administration at the end and the Biden administration, they've been, the print and press has been running around the clock. So you got these back-to-back administrations, and really the previous administration before that and the previous administration before that. So government really tends to always grow, and we continue to have ongoing deficits. So it becomes a big problem, because as the money increases, the goods and services don't increase at the same level. So you have this imbalance. So ultimately what happens is you have more dollars chasing fewer goods, which essentially the symptom of that is rising prices. Now, separately, as a different concept, there is supply and demand. And so as an example, if there's bad weather in Florida and they have a freeze and they lose a whole bunch of oranges, the price of oranges will go up, but that's a supply-demand,
right,
and has nothing to do with really monetary policy.
You said something a moment ago that I had to say years ago when I was watching this. Too many dollars chasing too few goods. I was saying that when we were seeing the rise of inflation, the worst in 50 years, as they were just printing out money and passing trillions and trillions of dollars in that crazy era I call COVID, including like the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, $1.7 trillion, another. Don't we have like a $34 trillion deficit at the federal level? And you know what? No one cuts a damn thing down there. You couldn't do that in your business.
The problem with the Democrats and the Republicans, essentially, is that it's almost like one uniparty. They can fight about the issues, whether it's abortion or whether it's the border. But in the end, both parties are generally pro-war. They're pro-inflation and they're pro-government. And both parties really want to control, people ultimately. And it manifests itself in different ways. I mean, the Republicans, at least the Republicans in Florida, passed this bill that was going to ban TikTok, for an example, and Governor DeSantis correctly vetoed that. And we should be framing it in terms of pro-freedom and anti-freedom, not so much Republican or Democrat, left and right, because that's really has morphed into, we've had Republican and Democrat government now for quite some time.
And nothing changes.
Well, it gets worse.
Yeah.
It gets worse, as you just pointed out, with the deficit.
Nothing changes.
The national debt is astronomical.
People say, I want to go to Washington and change Washington, and never changes. Hey, when we come back, we're going to have some fun. Joe Matarese, I'm going to ask you to give, because we had Debbie, quick question. What was the website of Medicus? I don't know if she's looking for work.
Yeah, it's medicushcs.com.
M-E-D-I-C-U-S. Yeah. Medicus, like short for med.
Yeah.
Okay.
HCS.com.
You can check it out. That's in Wyndham. Yeah. Joe Matarese in house. I always love to get with Joe. He's, you know what I was thinking earlier? We're home to some wonderful entrepreneurs. I mean, Dick Anagnost in Manchester, Craig Benson, a good friend now running Planet Fitness. But yeah, I love entrepreneurs because they get it. Economic prosperity doesn't come from the federal government, but sadly in our country, a lot of people think it does. It comes from taking risk, working harder than the next person, and trying to save a little and create opportunity. But let's talk about the economy. You said something during the break, Joe, and we're just talking politics and media, something I do every day. But Joe, nice enough to be in our studios, talking about, you had a great line about people were all in this sort of same boat, no pun intended, two ships passing the night in a very politically divided country. And Joe, let me just say this quickly. I pointed out when the national media didn't it the other day, because I see through all this stuff. Why did Joe Biden come to New Hampshire Tuesday afternoon for a presidential visit now that the general election's underway and it's him and Trump again? He hasn't been here in 2 years. He wasn't on the ballot here. He doesn't give a damn about New Hampshire. But the White House knows this election's going to be that close where four electoral college votes in New Hampshire could matter. But my point is, this is going to be a very contentious, divisive election. It's going to be very close, and the White House knows it. So your line about the way media works and the economy and how even the president refers to the economy in his State of the Union and puts a nice glowing ribbon on it it creates and perpetuates this divisive two ships in the night where no one really talks about commonalities.
You know, have a really divided country, and it's really driven by the media, and it's driven by social media, because you have algorithms that keep people in their lane. And then, you know, you have one group of people watching CNN and one group of people watching Fox. When you look at overall stories and you're trying to find commonality, oftentimes a particular story that appears on Fox will not be covered on CNN and vice versa. So you have people who you would talk to in the street and you would ask them a question about something that would be factual or obvious, and it's deer in the headlights. They would have no clue what you're talking about, mm-hmm. because that's brand new information for them, because there's no mechanism for them to see it. No one, 60 Minutes, like these, you know, Wall Street Journal, New York Times.
Well, used to have. They would do enterprising reporting, but they don't do it anymore. It's a political hit job half the time.
100%.
Look what they did to DeSantis before he even ran.
100%.
And they pulled the story after Sunday night because it was the biggest hatchet job I've ever had. They didn't even allow him to answer the question because he was not what they wanted. And that led to a lot of the woke stuff I'm seeing, like at Disney and these corporations. So we are very divided. I want to keep talking a little bit about the media and public perception. But I said earlier, Joe Matarese, being a media person, there's human subjectivity that goes into news coverage. That's just a fact. There's no page or book you look at or manual, page 246, on what to cover if you're a news organization. But it's gotten worse than that. They only, like you said, they only cover and they only say what they think their listeners and viewers want to hear.
I think it's more insidious than that. Yeah, I think they actually lie. And they definitively lie.
Yeah, whether they want to admit it or not.
Well, I think it's already been proven. I mean, you know, there's been secret video. I mean, what about the head of CNN during COVID, who was, you know, they were putting the case rates down, which wasn't even really that accurate of a number, and they were doing, he was caught on video saying, I'm doing as we get better ratings. It creates panic. This is from CNN.
I know. Or they won't cover something, and it's worse because they could pass a polygraph. They don't consider it lying. We won't cover it that way, or we won't even cover this one story. And I think I'm doing everyone a favor by doing it. No, you should report news as it is and let people decide. But that stopped a long time ago.
Look, one of the most dangerous things that a government can do, and it seemed like Biden just did this the other day, he presented a glossy picture of the economy at a time when family and small businesses are suffering. Governments are very optimistic, but sending euphoric messages tends to backfire, especially when the situation for the middle class is complicated.
Yeah.
In the United States, you know, the Biden administration's message of the strongest economy in decades, it's not just an exaggeration. It may anger voters who suffer the burden of negative real wage growth, accumulated inflation, higher taxes. According to Tax Policy Center, 20-30% of middle-income households saw a tax hike in 2022. And according to the foundation, workers bear probably about 70% of the corporate income tax hikes. Indirect taxation is only one source of purchasing power loss for families. Rising taxation on productive capacity reduces the ability of manufacturing jobs. It limits real wage growth. It creates higher costs for consumers.
You can't, you know what it is? You're right. They it's just BS. They'll tell you the situation with inflation is not getting worse. Therefore, and we have low unemployment. Therefore, you should do the happy dance. And we have a soft landing, no recession. And yet the family living in Londonderry, Manchester, Concord, is getting a $480 bill on their electricity, and they're running out of money after going to the grocery store once or twice a month. They paid their rent. We have a affordable housing crisis. Money runs out the third week of a paycheck month, and people are racking up their credit card bills, paying 20% because of high interest rates. And people are not feeling good in this economy. They don't have the savings. And they look at the government, and all the government does is print money, and yet they tell us to save.
Well,
they're going to blame us for a slow recovery.
We can put real numbers to that. One way of measuring the situation of families in the United States is the misery index.
Yeah, the misery index.
But it's a real thing. It's calculated as the current unemployment rate added to the accumulated consumer price index measure of inflation over the past 4 years. So historically, that index, according to Bloomberg Economics, has been 17.5%, in years when the current president wins an election. The reality at the United States in the United States now, the misery index stands at 23% for the whole nation, and Bloomberg estimates that will reach a staggering 24% by the time the election happens. This means that the average U.S. citizen has lost an enormous amount of wealth and purchasing power in salaries due to accumulated inflation. And low unemployment may not create voter support, you know, at least for the current president. You know, when President Trump was in, you know, he was part of the problem with COVID. I think his policies were not very good, and he's not taking accountability for that. The other thing is, you know, he wrote a massive check, you know, shutting the economy down and then writing a massive check. So again, both sides are contributing significantly to this debt.
Yeah. And they talk about, you know, changing things, but you get in there and nothing changes. And I said on my show the other day, because I want to touch upon some of the social governance stuff in the next segment on corporations, including Disney. But Joe Matarese, chairman of Medicus, has been talking some public policy, which you love to do, and you're very adept at it. I was talking recently when it comes to the hypocrisy in Washington. And I actually think what's sad is our Capitol, our home of great monuments, honoring those who served, the Holocaust Museum, the Smithsonian. Our Capitol has become, and Trump was right about this the first time, it's not just a swamp, it's becoming the problem in America. Why is it, Joe, that states like New Hampshire or Texas or Florida or outstates have to run within a budget and a balance, money in, money out? Why is it that Washington is not accountable to any of the same rules? Why is it that members of Congress, I don't want to bring up Nancy Pelosi, can become rich, filthy rich, if you will, from public service and benefit indirectly or directly from tax, from stock deals that you know that you're going to vote on for the chip industry, and no one does a damn thing. Yet Martha Stewart, who I have more respect for, actually went to jail for stock stuff. So Washington, they say they don't want term limits, so you're in there 20 or 30 years. Good luck to the person who wants to run against you. And they raised $50 to $70 million for a U.S. Senate race in New Hampshire. And they say they want to take dark money out of politics. Money and power and corruption in Washington are absolutely running the Capitol. And it's and I think the problem in America is our Capitol. I really do.
Well, I think contributing to Congress. That significantly goes back to the media, because they were the watchdogs in the past. So the media get the people in power craft legislation oftentimes for their own benefit. And until the media...
And they don't even read what's in the bills.
No, they don't. And they don't seem to have to, because they get away with it because, see, people, the electorate is rationally ignorant.
Rationally
ignorant. And the reason they're rationally ignorant... Well, no, because let's think about it. If I'm a middle America mother or dad, and I'm working, you know, 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, and, you know, the mom's taking the kids to soccer and making dinner and doing all the things that happens in a family, and worrying about the kids and how the kids are doing in school and you know, looking after the household. And
you don't
then,
have time,
you know,
to read legislation in Washington.
Who's gonna, and why would you? Because
right.
Does that legislation really impact you to the extent that you're going to go spend hours and hours learning about a particular bill? And
yeah.
The answer is, of course, it's not, because you're worrying about your own family.
Yeah, and tomorrow and tonight and going to bed.
Absolutely, 100%. So in the end, they get away with that. Now, in theory, and the Founding Fathers wanted, you know, of course, we have freedom of speech and freedom of the press. It was so important for the media to call out the politicians.
Yeah.
And the politicians, there were some guardrails around them.
Yeah.
Now, it's a free-for-all. There's no guardrails. We know Anthony Fauci, as an example, lied in Congress, in front of Congress. He lied in front of Rand Paul about gain of function. It's almost certain that the virus came from a lab.
Oh yeah, no, our own government has said it did now, and no one's even called him on that.
Well, I mean, they do. He's in subcommittees.
Yeah, but you know what I mean?
He goes to subcommittees. It's on C-SPAN. Nobody watches.
But the country's divided down the middle. Some people think he's great. Some people know that of the crap that happened.
100%. When you talk on the street, and some people are real big advocates of Anthony Fauci, and it's because they don't know the whole story.
But that's just one example. I mean, you know, the president the other night in State of the Union, Joe Matarese, referred to the border bill stalled in Congress. Have you seen one story in the national media? What's in that bill? If you've seen one story, you have to go Google and read it yourself. If you've seen one story, what's in that? Do you think the members of Congress who voted either way even read it?
I'm not even sure if the Democrats are going to go along with that. I mean, you know, what he essentially...
You had a good point. Nail on the head. In the media coverage, what they all took, hook, line, and sinker, stalled in Congress because Donald Trump, who doesn't have a vote in the House and Senate, intimidated Republicans to not vote for it so you don't give Biden credit. Not one report on the Democrats who didn't vote for it, Joe. There wasn't one report that Democrats didn't support it as well. But no one, it was all about Trump. Blame Trump for the border.
No, I understand that.
Because you know why?
But I think
the border could cost Joe Biden re-election.
There's no question. But if I'm just an average person in the country, I see the devastating effects of almost all of the Trump proposals and all of the Trump work that was done with the border to secure it. It was all undone, essentially.
But no one talks about the executive orders Biden signed.
Okay, but
to undo it.
I understand that.
But
when you're walking in a major city, particularly in a blue, if you're a Democrat and you're walking in New York City, and you see people all over the streets, and you see all the people go in the bathroom, et cetera, needles and everything,
fentanyl,
all of that stuff. So you can't get away from it. So you know, I could try to convince you today. It's raining out and snowing. All you do is look out the window and you see something different.
Right.
So at some point, your credibility.
Yeah.
I mean, look, last week, the History Channel had a higher rating than CNN.
So I'm not surprised.
Well, that's it.
I think on some days we might. I mean, I don't know who's watching it
anymore. The future, I think, of media is going to be independent journalism. And we're seeing it now, podcasting, yeah, et cetera.
You know, we don't have that much time. Joe Matarese and I talk about it a lot in the show. Do you know, Joe, you didn't know this, we're talking about Disney and Anheuser, you know, some of the corporate governance, social governance. Do you know that in New Hampshire, and I started talking about it, and that day Governor Sununu took it down, do you know that the state employees, they have an internal website, so if you're an employee for the state,
yep,
as they should, a secure Department of Transportation, corrections, you get it, health, there's a website. So they were going to add an inclusive language choice words for state employees about a month ago. Someone worked on this. One person, by the way, for a while. And do you know what they wanted to propose here in New Hampshire for state employees until I started talking about this after NH Journal did a story on it, but I really hammered it as I was reading this? You, as a state employee, they didn't want you to use the word citizen. Use another term. Do you know why?
No.
It might be offensive to foreign national. This is New Hampshire. Citizen. They didn't want you to use certain gender terms at all. So if you said you're a state trooper and you stopped the guy on the interstate for going 110 on 93, they wanted you to say they, even though that's a plural pronoun, not a singular. So no gender, no he, she, them, it's they. Citizen was offensive to foreign. Where does this mindset come from? Because I don't have it. I don't get it. I don't get what the end result and why people think this is even worth contemplating.
Well,
New Hampshire, we're not talking Berkeley.
Well, what's interesting is that you can see how, though, the pushback, a lot of this stuff gets hidden and then it gets exposed. So, right, you did to some extent a service, right, to society by exposing it, because there's a lot of people that's going to push back on that. And, you know, what I don't understand, honestly, in both at corporate boardrooms or just in society, is that, you know, you want to be inclusive. Why wouldn't you want to be inclusive? But you don't want to be inclusive by essentially being exclusive or by discriminating. And that's what a lot of this stuff is. It's good for one, but bad for another. And I don't think people tend, when they write these policies, they never take a balanced view.
Well, I think it might be good for one, but bad for eight. What I'm saying is it's imbalanced, in all due respect. If you want to change the name in Durham, New Hampshire, from the Christmas tree lighting to a holiday because it offends one person, nine people are silent, even if they love the Christmas tree lighting. That really happened, by the way.
And it is, and it is a Christmas tree, though, so I don't know why we have to hide
even
behind...
Even if you don't celebrate Christmas.
100%.
People like looking at it, the lights, you know, so I don't know, it's... I don't know where it goes. I think things are... I think common sense is starting to permeate a little bit, but I urge people, one point you made, you got to get your own information, unfortunately, because the Wall Street Journal or 60 Minutes is not going to kind of tell you anymore down the middle. We have to go to the top, but we'll get you back again soon. Go ahead. One final thought.
No, I was gonna say that one of the positive things that happened in COVID was that when the kids got home and they were on the on Zoom and talking with their teachers and whatnot, it exposed the teachers what they were teaching and the parents figured
it
out.
Well, that's indirect, but also we realized we ruined a generation by too long remote learning when they didn't have to, and half the stuff we were lied to about all the whole thing. All right, Joe Medici, check out Medicus. Thanks.